Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, and Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, a weekly look at the issues surrounding Minnesota military service members, families, and employers. I'm Tom Lyons. Today, we get an inside look at the role Minnesotans are playing in the training of Afghan security forces. Minnesota's Adjutant General looks back at Veterans Day. We find out what it takes to become a Yellow Ribbon community, and we discover the Minnesota Commander's Task Force. All this and more on today's Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Check our podcast of today's show and all our shows online at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Let's get started. This week we have Major Rob Matala join us. He was commander of the Operational Mentoring and Liaison Team in Afghanistan. Easy for me to say, Major, sorry. Major Matala, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you, Tom.
Major, the military is great at using abbreviations, and understand this Operational Mentoring and Liaison Team is called an omelet. Does that mean you start your day at breakfast?
That was the joke when I was given the mission. When I first was asked to go on an omelet, I literally looked at the commander and said, "Sir, we're going to breakfast." And no, it was the breakfast was soon to be in Afghanistan is where we ended up.
And it was breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Absolutely.
Can you tell us what this team is all about, sir?
The Operational Mentoring Liaison Team, or OMLET as we all like to call it, is a team comprised of officers and NCOs that are trained up to go over to Afghanistan and help train the Afghan National Army. You serve as a mentor, a liaison, as well as a trainer.
So you were in partnership with Croatia?
In this particular OMLET team, it was a multinational OMLET where the lead country was actually Croatia, our partnership country that we have part of the Department of Defense Partnership for Peace program. And so half the team was Croatians and the other half was Minnesotans.
And what was the mission of the team?
The team helped train and advise the 4th Kandak in the Afghan National Army. It's a Kandak comprised of field artillery, engineers, as well as recon elements.
So you actually, did you say there was 12 members of your team? And
12 Minnesotans and 13 Croatians, yes.
And you partnered together to train the Afghan National Army.
Yes. Language was not only a barrier with the Afghans, but it was interesting trying to learn Croatian at the same time.
And how was the experience trying to train the Afghan National Army who've been there, lived there, and are presumably still working today since you've come home?
The interesting thing about the Afghan Army is they're really in their infancy. Some of the problems we had in particular is the education level is so low. Of the 500-man unit that we were help mentoring, maybe 20, 25 of them could read or write at a fourth-grade level, which really made training and advising them interesting.
How's the leadership support in the Afghan Army?
The Afghan leaders come from a variety of backgrounds. Most of them, surprisingly, were trained by the Russians. They fought with the old Afghan Army that was trained by the Russians. So, in particular, my counterpart had been to a Russian school in the Ukraine, and that's where he learned to become an officer. Now, some of the other officers they had in the Afghan unit were Mujahideen, so they actually fought against each other. So some of that was issues still today that they didn't quite get along. Some of it was tribal issues. Most of them come from different tribes, and they try to create a diverse officer corps. They're doing a pretty good job of that right now, but they have yet to really, at least during our time there, just have some difficulties working together.
Did you get any briefings about the background of the Afghan leadership before you started?
We had a team in country before we got there, and I tried to get as much information as possible. But once we hit the ground, you really started to understand the enormous project you're about to take on, in particular with the different backgrounds, because it just takes some time to get to know your counterpart, and that was how you spent most of your day with them, drinking chai, sitting talking about family, trying to understand the man in front of you, and so you can help them prepare their own army for their own country's safety.
So the mission looked good on paper. When you got there, you had to figure out, how do we do this?
Absolutely. On paper, it sounded pretty simple in many ways. But when you got there, even to this day, I think it's probably the most complex mission I've ever been a part of.
We're speaking with Major Rob Medela, former commander of an operational mentoring and liaison team in Afghanistan, here on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on KTOC 100.3 FM. Major, now that you're back, did you make any progress with the Afghan Army, and what would you expect? Did it work?
We had an InBid reporter ask me that question, how do I see progress? And I try to put it in a football game now that it's football season back here. Going into the game, we like to think we're going to score touchdowns. Leaving there, I was hoping just to move the ball, not even 5 yards. I was talking inches. That's how slow things are there. We did make progress in the area of trying to track their quality maintenance programs or implement maintenance programs, as well as encouraging their leaders to take more forward roles in being responsible and accountable for their soldiers. And that's something we passed off to the current team that's in the country right now, and they'll find their own areas where they'll continue to progress on that. So
you were there for 1 year?
Just under a year, actually. We spent some time training with the Croatians in Croatia before we actually went into country.
And then did you have a chance to debrief the new team before?
Absolutely. The continuity piece of this is we know the next team going in, so we were able to shoot emails back and forth and even talk on the phone while we were in country and try to help them as much as possible. This is what you need. This is what you need to expect. And it's just going to get better and better with the next team and the next team. We're gathering so much information now. We will know this unit inside and out.
Major, you were away from your family for a long period of time. How did that go, and what did you learn on that deployment?
In my case, I was very fortunate. No major issues while I was gone. But for some of the soldiers, life happens. When you're gone, life continues on. We had a birth of a child, first child for one of my soldiers. We had some life issues with families being sick and actually parents passing away. So it was trying in many ways.
Major, were you briefed or debriefed on the Yellow Ribbon reintegration programs?
Actually, before we deployed, we partook with our family members in the Yellow Ribbon training, which proved to be very valuable. Several of our soldiers, utilized it. Not our soldiers, but their families. And I would hear stories. In particular, my driver was very proud when his wife would email him, let him know that there was a full colonel volunteering this time, coming over to either shovel his snow in the driveway or mow his lawn. Or I would hear from my other soldiers of communities baking meals or stopping by and helping with furnace issues. It's a program that I can't speak enough about, that it really made a difference for those soldiers so they could focus on what they're doing.
Being halfway around the world and not being able to take care of little things at home makes a difference when there's a program like the BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org available.
It allows the soldier to focus what they need to focus on. The family stress issues can take away from what they're doing, and that's not what we want. So, yeah, the Yellow Ribbon really proved to be something special for me at that time.
Major, you were telling me that one of the members of your team had to come home, and they were helped by one of these programs?
When we mobilized and deployed, one of my young NCOs, significant other, was pregnant, and she went into labor a little early. And he would not have been able to go home unless he had a grant from the Minnesota Foundation. And so therefore, that's another program I can't speak enough about, that it served its purpose and took care of the soldier and allowed him to get home and be there with his newborn baby.
Had to make you and your team feel a lot better that there's a community back here to help.
Absolutely. It's something that I'm very proud of.
Major, thanks for joining us. That was Major Rob Medela, former commander of the Operational Mentoring and Liaison Team in Afghanistan. We have links to more information on Operational Mentor and Liaison Teams on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Want to know what's on the mind of Minnesota's Adjutant General? Generally Speaking is next on KTOC 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. It's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
This last Thursday, Veterans Day, I hope you pause to remember those who served our state and nation. Veterans Day sprung from World War I, the Great War, the war to end all wars. It shook the nations of the world for 4 years, claiming over 20 million lives. The armistice was signed on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. Since then, nations commemorate that event with a moment of silence. That moment of silence punctuates the air and focuses everyone's attention to the service of our veterans across the country and in locations around the world. And those veterans encompass many different kinds of people, those who serve our country in many diverse ways. This day is observed around the world and has been known by many names, such as Armistice Day, Remembrance Day, and others. It once was a celebration of the silencing of the cannons of World War I. Now it marks a day when nations around the world pause in a moment of silence with solemn pride in remembrance of the heroism of those who have served, those who are currently serving, and those who died in our country's service. We don't mark this day each year as a celebration of victory, but rather as a celebration of those who made victory possible. It's a day we keep in our minds the brave men and women of this young nation, generations of them, who above all else believed in and fought for a set of ideals. And in this time of persistent conflict, for the better part of a decade, they have endured tour after tour in distant and difficult places. They have protected us from danger, and they have given others the opportunity for a better life. So to all of them, to this day's veterans, to the fallen, and to their families, there is no tribute, no commemoration, no praise that can truly match the magnitude of your sacrifice and service. We can but offer a humble moment of silence. Silence does not come naturally to America. It's not in American's nature to be still or silent. You see, silence is something we struggle with. Our world is neither silent nor peaceful. Our American culture struggles in the midst of silence. Yet, during short-lived moments, our world struggles with war, strife, injustice, hunger, disease, and destruction. Our nation's veterans have heeded the call and responded to the cries of the world. These people stood out as our friends and neighbors in our communities, the lawyer, the truck driver, the sheriff's deputy, the teacher, the tax advisor, as those who did not stand on the sidelines. They volunteered to train, sacrifice, and perform under pressure whenever and wherever needed. These men and women did not sit back in silence, but stood as one against a chaotic world to try and bring about peace. Thank you, veterans.
Thank you, General Nash. You can link to the Adjutant General's blog, Facebook, and Twitter feed through MinnesotaNationalGuard.org/generallyspeaking. Each week we showcase Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, a comprehensive program that connects service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. This week, Annette Kuiper joins us. She is the Director of the Military Outreach with Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Annette, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you, Tom.
Annette, can you tell our listeners what is a Yellow Ribbon community?
A Yellow Ribbon community is a community that infuses support for service members, military families, and veterans within every area of a community, from their schools to their businesses to any kind of entity within the community that can help show appreciation and support for military families.
And Ed, I understand you played a big part in the first Yellow Ribbon community, City. Can you tell me a little bit about how that happened?
Yes, I had helped take care of the families when my son was deployed in Iraq between 2005 and 2007. And when they returned, I wanted to do more. And so I heard about the Yellow Ribbon Community Program. It was just in its infancy getting started. And I decided to start something like that within Farmington. So I called a group of people together in Farmington, and we brainstormed how we could become a community that goes over and above to support service members and military families. So we started in 2008.
And at what point did you start interacting with the Minnesota National Guard?
Just at that time when my son returned, I started volunteering with the Minnesota Army National Guard, and we were so successful in Farmington in gathering the support efforts for military families and really letting military families know that we were there to support them, and as well as events to honor our veterans, that I started getting calls from other communities about how to get started. So the National Guard kept sending people my way to help them get started with their Yellow Ribbon programs within their own communities, and I started as a volunteer helping other parents prepare for the deployment of their sons and daughters as well.
And briefly, what process do you go through to become a Yellow Ribbon community?
So becoming a Yellow Ribbon community is really inviting the Minnesota Army National Guard, the deployment cycle support team, into your community to learn about different ways to infuse support within every area, within key areas of the community. And inviting them in and beginning to bring a committee together from across those key areas that represent all of those areas, that represent all the educational systems within and youth programs within a community, the public safety and faith-based organizations, as well as the businesses and the veterans organizations. And a steering committee is created within a community to really look inside every area to look at what they can do to not only work together, but to do the things that they already are doing, to highlight the things they are already doing to honor military service members.
So, Annette, the real purpose of pulling together and putting together a plan and becoming a Yellow Ribbon community is to help support the families, help support the troops and their families.
Yes, that is absolutely the purpose, and really to become a community that is honoring, recognizing, and supporting service members, military families, and the veterans within their community.
We're speaking to Annette Kuiper, Director of Military Outreach for the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon programs in the Minnesota Military Hour on KTOC 100.3 FM. Annette, can you give me a couple examples of things that the Yellow Ribbon communities do to support the families?
Yes, we've had wonderful, miraculous things happen within our community. One of our communities has come together within every area to have a patriotic celebration, to include their businesses in having a community dinner, as well as their schools and bringing kids together to sing patriotic songs and bring their whole community together to honor their veterans. In another instance, we've had a community, in fact, my Farmington Yellow Ribbon Network, as well as the Lakeville Yellow Ribbon Network, really came together recently when one of our residents lost both his legs in Iraq. And his mother contacted the Yellow Ribbon Network that evening after they heard about his injury. And both Yellow Ribbon Networks between Farmington and Lakeville rallied around this family immediately. They were able to get child care for his children. We had volunteers that were able to help the family take care of their pets, their yard, help with meals, and prepare them to go to Walter Reed to meet their son. While they were in Walter Reed, we had everyone, volunteers, bringing meals over to the caretakers who stay behind to take care of the kids. We had mental health professionals who were willing to help the family in any way that they needed, just someone to talk to. And it was just a wonderful collaboration of both those networks coming together, and we were able to do that and take care of the family within 2 hours from the call from the mother.
And that, as I recall, you even had another troop who had lost two legs come in and speak to his family before they went to visit him, did you not?
Yes, we were able to connect the family that morning, the next morning, with John Creso, who was able to just give such great advice to the mom and dad about what to expect when they went to Walter Reed and how they could help their son. And they have since formed a relationship with John that has been so helpful for the family.
Now, Annette, you are a Blue Star mom, which means you had a child that was deployed. And I understand in Farmington you had a group of Blue Star mothers and grandmothers get together as well.
Yes. 3 years ago, we found out through our Yellow Ribbon Network that we had a lot of single soldiers in our area. So we started a mother-grandmother luncheon where we honor those mothers and grandmothers of currently serving service members. And our first luncheon, we had about 40 mothers, and last year we had our third one, and it was 80 mothers. And we just have a beautiful, elegant luncheon to honor those women who have raised our heroes, our national heroes, and who have bore the pain of having to let them into go into a war zone. So we bring them together every year, and we'll have another one coming up in May.
Now, Annette, for the families who have a son or daughter, mother, father deployed, it's the small things that matter, isn't it?
Absolutely. And talking to other moms, and for mothers and fathers to surround themselves with a support system themselves, and to really be able to talk to each other and have the support they need as they worry about their son or daughter in harm's way.
Annette, we've just got about 30 seconds left. What would you say to our listeners who are interested in forming a Yellow Ribbon community?
If they are interested in forming a Yellow Ribbon community, they should go to our website, www.beyondtheyellowribbon.org, and they can learn the steps to becoming a Yellow Ribbon community, and they can become strengthen their community and become a community that shows appreciation and recognition for our service members and their families.
Annette, you've done a fabulous job. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks for joining us today. That was Annette Kuiper, the Director of Military Outreach for Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. We've linked to more information on becoming Yellow Ribbon on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. For more information on bringing service members all the way home, visit BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org. Now let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase, a story where someone just like you and I went out of their way to make a difference in the life of a service member or military family. This letter comes to us from California. It reads, I recently visited my niece in Minnesota and was incredibly impressed by what your Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program offers military personnel and their families. She told me about a family preparation academy her family went to before her husband deployed. She also showed me all the neat things for service members at beyondtheyellowribbon.org and told me about a neighborhood group that took care of her leaves this fall. I'm a co-founder of a group in Southern California whose goal is to build a permanent veterans monument in our community. I've looked for a group similar to yours who offers what you do for families in Southern California, and I have not found anything close to what you do. All of you are to be commended. Your programs are proof that there are people who truly care for those deployed and those who remain at home. Thanks for taking care of my niece. Signed, Janie. Thank you, Janie, for showcasing how Minnesotans strive to go beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon is a comprehensive program that connects service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. It also connects organizations, agencies, and companies to provide resources and support to service members and their families. And it is united to bring service members all the way home. To learn how you can make a difference in the life of a service member or military family, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. After the break, we will visit the Commissioner's Corner and hear from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on KTOC 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
This is Bill Popp, the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. This message is to help employers recruit and hire top-notch people. Did you know that only 27% of the men and women between the ages of 17 and 24 qualify to be in the U.S. military? That's right, only 27% qualify to be in the U.S. military. Did you know that 1 out of 6 veterans were on the front line? That means 5 out of 6 veterans worked in supply and support positions. Did you know that the United States military is one of the best training institutions in the world? Our veterans have received excellent training on the latest supply and support technologies. The same supply and support know-how that is required to contribute to the success of a company. The words unselfish, technology talented, and policy discipline describe most of our veterans. If those words describe the type of person you're looking for, do what I did. Add to your job postings and your website that you're a veteran-friendly employer and participate in the National Hire Veterans First campaign. Thank you, veterans. Thank you, military families. And thank you, KTOC.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. This week, we hear from Deputy Commissioner Reggie Worlds.
This week, I want to take a few minutes to focus on our veterans service organizations here in Minnesota. VSOs are nonprofit organizations that advocate for veterans benefits at the state and federal level, assist in the federal claims process, provide a social platform that builds camaraderie, and often assist with reintegration challenges. Community involvement is also high on the list. Everyone listening has probably heard of events in their community sponsored by their local Legion or VFW posts. VSOs also provide military funeral honors, color guards, scholarships, and the list goes on. An example is the Respect, Honor, Remember event for the Vietnam-era veterans held in June of 2009. This event was fully sponsored by VSOs and private donations and drew more than 5,000 people. As a veteran, I recognize the tremendous value in veteran service organizations. Some of the more well-known VSOs, as we call them, are the American Legion, the VFW, or Veterans of Foreign Wars, and the DAV, or Disabled American Veterans. However, there are many more. Here at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, we recognize all federally chartered VSOs as strong partners in our mission of serving Minnesota veterans and their families. I am personally a member of the American Legion, Disabled American Veterans, and AMVETS. Veteran service organizations sponsor events all over the state. In fact, this past Thursday, we held our annual Veterans Day event, sponsored by the Commander's Task Force. We had more than 400 folks from around the state join us as we remembered and celebrated the service of veterans past, present, and future. In a few minutes, you'll hear from Al Holton, our chair of the Minnesota Commander's Task Force. The CTF is comprised of 9 congressionally chartered veteran service organizations, including the American XPOWs, the American Legion, AMVETS, Disabled American Veterans, Jewish War Veterans, the Marine Corps League, the Military Order of the Purple Heart, Veterans of Foreign Wars, and Vietnam Veterans of America. As the elected leaders of those respective organizations, they meet regularly to discuss the many issues affecting veterans and their families. The CTF has 3 main purposes or functions: developing a unified veterans legislative agenda, serving as an advisory board to the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs, and working as a unified veterans leadership team. Although we have about 400,000 veterans in Minnesota, membership numbers are down among veteran service organizations across the board. To join or learn more about joining a veteran service organization, visit your county veteran service officer or stop in at your local post.
Thank you, Commissioner Worlds. You can find out more about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs programs at minnesotaveteran.org or 1-888-LINK-VET. Each week, we explore the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs' commitment to serving Minnesota veterans, their dependents, and survivors by securing benefits provided by federal and state laws. This week, Al Holton joins us. He is chairman of the Minnesota Commander's Task Force. Mr. Holton, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Al, can you tell us, what is the Commander's Task Force?
Well, it's normally referred to as the CTF, and I guess in the legislative world that we deal with, in the Capitol, it's still the CTF. We're all military, so it's usually acronyms we like to deal with. But it's a gathering of people. It's of the 9 organizations that the commissioner had alluded to, and we come through with a basic unified voice to watch the legislative process, to testify, and we usually put together every year an agenda and then things we wanted to put in front of our Congress at the state level and in the federal level.
Now, Al, the purpose of the group, I think I heard the deputy commissioner say that you act as an advisory board to the commissioner of the Department of Public Veterans Affairs?
Yes, we have an extremely close working relationship with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
And as an advisory group, what type of issues do you get into and discuss with the department?
Well, it could be everything from financial, it could be anything that we put on the legislative agenda, or things that he sees that he needs some help with or needs some, for lack of a better term, I guess you could see some power in his corner that we try to persuade or convince legislators or any other kind of group like this that's, you know, to funding, to legislation that we want passed. But anywhere that we could help, you know, and make his job easier and make it sort of more successful in the treatment of veterans throughout the state.
Now, does your task force consist of one or more members from each of those organizations?
Yes. At the meetings, we usually have the commanders and the adjutants from each of the individual organizations, the 9 that are listed.
And they all have the opportunity to bring up issues that they think are important to veterans?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If there's something comes in there, the voting takes place only by, and everything's unanimous, the voting only takes place by the commanders of each of the organizations. And like I said, it has to be unanimous when we vote on something.
I'm not quite clear on this. Do all the members of the task force meet with the commissioner of the Department of Veterans Affairs?
Well, jointly, right. We set up at least once a month, and now once the governor is chosen, we'll probably sit down and start working on another legislative agenda with the Department of Veterans Affairs, state of Minnesota.
So part of what you do is monitor the legislative sessions?
Correct. Yes.
We're speaking with Al Holton, the chairman for the Minnesota Commanders Task Force, here on Minnesota Military Radio Hour, KTOC 100.3 FM. Al, can you tell us some of the issues that you've dealt with in the past legislative session?
Well, funding has always been out there in the forefront. I think that's many of the things we do. We've dealt with things from veterans' preference for hiring. We've had different projects with the veterans' home. I think the creation of the CTF was over the fact that we were formed when they were looking at possibly the homes, the veterans' homes throughout the state of Minnesota, were actually going to be taken care of by the Department of Veterans or Public Welfare. And, of course, that was an outcry. They didn't want it. They wanted it. The veteran community wanted to stay with the Department of Veterans Affairs, and that's when they formed the Veterans Home Board.
Well, I understand you're a retired Wabasha County Veterans Service Officer.
Correct.
Does your commander's task force work closely with the each of the county veteran service officers?
Yes, we do. We do.
And how do you interact with them, Al?
Well, there is an advisory to us, too. We deal with them as me being still a member of that organization. We meet with them. We meet with their office holders, their president. We spend, you know, if there's things that pertain to them and they need legislation or something they see that isn't probably treating veterans the way they would appreciate it, they would actually come to us and we'd be one of the people that would work on the legislative end to rectify that problem.
Well, for our listeners who may not know, there's a county veteran service officer in every county, usually at the county seat.
Yes. They might not all be in the county seat now because some of the courthouses and whatever, but yes, all 87 counties have a veteran service officer mandated by state law.
And what all do they deal with? Any issues that come up for veterans?
Virtually anything. If it has the word veteran somewhere around it, whether it's even active duty or veterans, that's what we deal with, you know. And, of course, one of the useful tools now, we can find things so fast through the Internet, but that's absolutely right. Whatever, any part of it, whether retirees, active duty, veterans, spouses, children, anything that has the word veteran around it, we would deal with.
There's over 400,000 veterans in Minnesota, and some of them, as you know, have a beef from once in a while or something they're interested in, and typically they'll talk about that at the local VFW or the Legion, something like that. What do you tell the local service organizations to get in touch with the veteran service officer and then come to you? How does that all work out?
Well, hopefully that they would do that. Every chapter or post has a veteran service office, and what they do is hopefully they would refer this to the actual trained person, the veteran service officer or one of the assistants within the county, and that they would get the information to them so it could be handled appropriately and not waste time and get things taken care of as soon as possible.
Al, I wonder, there are many organizations that comprise the Commander's Task Force. The Deputy Commissioner read them all off. Why are there so many groups that represent veterans?
Well, actually, that's only part of them. There's actually around almost 40 of them all told that we know of. Small groups, big groups, splinter groups, but these are the main nine right here that you see.
Does that mean us old veterans can't get together with one group, Al, or is it just it takes many?
They all serve a different purpose. When you look at the American Legion, they're broad. The AMVETS is a little broader. VFW represents just strictly veterans that served in a war zone, not during war, but in a war zone. The AMVETS, of course, they're a little broader yet, as long as you're in a service in a wartime. Disabled veterans, we serve veterans that are disabled, regardless if it's wartime, or it has to be wartime, but whether it's because of war or combat wounded, it doesn't make any difference. The Jewish war veterans, of course, that's self-explanatory. The Marine Corps League, they work on their Marines. It's an organization that they're very fond of, the Marines. Military of the Purple Heart is strictly made up of people that have a Purple Heart that was wounded, whether they're grunts out in the field or wherever they're at. Anybody that was wounded or because of enemy action can belong to that. And like I said, the Vietnam Veterans, that's an organization that's made up of Vietnam veterans, and they have some complimentary membership apparently now.
Now, Al, through your commander's task force, when you're meeting with the commissioner of the Department of Veterans Affairs, if he wants to reach out to the membership of these various organizations with a question or some input, do you have the ability to do that?
Well, sure. We'd go back to our department headquarters, which are all located in St. Paul at the Veterans Service Building, and there'd be emails go out, and everybody is on that now, the Legion, VFW, the Purple Heart, DAV. All the organizations have actually contact with their people. And they get it out to the chapter level and the post level, and there it would go out as a newsletter or it could come out of a newsletter as the department headquarters up here for each of the organizations.
So you can go out and solicit some feedback and give some good information back to the commissioner's office.
Absolutely. Plus, we like a little personal contact. When the commanders are out visiting their chapters or post, we usually quiz them to see how things are.
That's great, Al. Thanks for joining us today. That's Al Holton, the chairman of the Minnesota Commanders Task Force. We have linked to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. To find out more about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, go to MinnesotaVeteran.org or call 1-888-LINK-VET. When we return, we'll discover Minnesota's historic role in the Civil War beyond Gettysburg. Next on KTalk 100.3 FM, this is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. Joining us now is Stephen Osman. For over 30 years, he managed the historic Fort Snelling and recently retired as a senior historian with the Minnesota Historical Society. Mr. Osman, welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Sir, last week we talked about the Civil War and one of the most historic units, the 1st Minnesota. Was this the only unit sent to war?
Not by a long shot. According to Governor Ramsey, who was the governor of the state in 1861 to 1864, about half of the military-qualified Minnesotans actually served in the Army at some time during the war, about 24,000 men, and that compares to about only 6% who served during World War I. There were 22 separate organizations. Most were infantry, but there were also several cavalry units, three small artillery batteries, and even two little sharpshooter companies.
And besides just the 1st Minnesota, there were a couple other outfits that earned a reputation in their first battle?
There were indeed. The 2nd Minnesota, for example, late in 1861, were in Mill Springs, Kentucky, marching forward through mist and light rain toward a rail fence. They saw a long line of Confederates about 30 paces beyond the fence, got ready to fire at them, and all of a sudden realized that that was the second line of Confederates. The first line was laying literally at their feet on the other side of the fence. So their first fight was through that fence with bayonets and shooting at very close range. They went on and chased the Confederates off the field, captured their camp, defeated their whole army. And the 1st Minnesota at Bull Run in July of 1861, just a month after they went to Virginia, had higher casualties than any other Union regiment in the entire battle. They were just simply too brave to run away.
We're speaking with Stephen Osman on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on KTalk 100.3 FM. Stephen, what happened to the 3rd Minnesota?
Well, the 3rd Minnesota had sort of a tough time. They were a superbly drilled and trained organization, and they were part of the garrison of Murfreesboro, Tennessee, in the summer of 1862. Forrest's cavalry attacked the town with actually a smaller force than the number of Union troops defending. Colonel Lester of the 3rd Minnesota was temporarily in command and was tricked into surrendering the entire post, and of course the 3rd Minnesota. The officers were sent to Confederate prison camp. The enlisted men were sent up to St. Louis to a prisoner exchange camp where they were supposed to sit until they were exchanged on paper for an equal number of Confederates. The Dakota War broke out. They were shipped back to Minnesota, decisively defeated the Dakota Indians in the Battle of Wood Lake, and managed to redeem their reputation, later sent to Arkansas to serve out the rest of the war.
Stephen, you told us last week that the troops were issued rifles and uniforms. How did they get from here to the East Coast?
Well, of course, most of the travel was in the summer. There was no railroad up to Minnesota, so they had to take the steamboat down to either La Crosse or Prairie du Chien, get on the train there, continue on to Chicago. Then the tracks linked up and then continue on to the East Coast. But only a couple of Minnesota units actually served in the East. One of the sharpshooter companies, both of the sharpshooter companies and the 1st Minnesota Regiment served out in the East. The rest served down the Mississippi River and, of course, took river boats down to where they eventually fought.
They not only fought bravely, but they had to work to get there, didn't they?
They did indeed.
Sir, were there any Minnesotans on Sherman's March to the Sea?
Well, Sherman's March to the Sea is quite a controversial and interesting campaign. It was the start of really total war for the first time. It began when Union forces captured the important rail and manufacturing center at Atlanta, Georgia. That November, the Army went cross-country some 300 miles, confiscated supplies along the way, destroyed crops, mills, factories. the 2nd and the 4th Minnesota Regiment of Infantry and the 1st Battery Minnesota Light Artillery marched with Sherman's forces and then helped to capture Savannah, Georgia, on Christmas Eve. Savannah was presented to President Lincoln as a Christmas present.
We've just got a few seconds left. Did some of these troops serve for a long time after Lee surrendered?
Absolutely. There were two Minnesota units, Brackett's Battalion of Cavalry and the 2nd Regiment of Cavalry. They didn't muster out until the summer of 1866, fully a year after everybody else got out of the Army. And that was because there was still conflict with the Dakota Indians west of Minnesota. Once peace treaties were signed, it was time to let those guys go back home.
Stephen Osman, thanks for joining us again today.
Thanks, Tom.
We've linked to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Let's take a look in the mailbag to see the listener question of the week. If you have a question, submit it to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Joining me in the studio today is the Director of Public Affairs for the Minnesota National Guard, Lieutenant Colonel Kevin Olson. Colonel, I've got a couple of questions for you today, and it has to do with your recent deployment. You were part of the longest deployment in Guard history and came back when?
Well, in fact, I've recently got back from my second deployment to Iraq in February, where I served with the Red Bulls. My previous deployment did, in fact, overlap with my friends with the 1st Brigade of the 34th Division. I wasn't part of that monumental 16 months in combat, the longest deployment of any military unit in Iraq, 22 months away from home. But I did, in fact, see my friends over there as I was leaving from my first deployment.
Colonel, you've been deployed twice and just home recently. With all the things that are going on, putting together this radio program recently, a lot of my friends have come up to me and said congratulations and good work. And some of them have said that they've never served in the military or maybe served in the military and were never deployed to a war zone. And they're apologizing. And I've told them, don't apologize. And what would you tell them as after your deployments and as Lieutenant Colonel in the National Guard? What's your answer to
that?
Well,
good for you, Tom Lyons, because people that have not deployed, whether they've served or not, you know, it's not a secret. 1% of our population serves in the military. But I can tell you firsthand that we get so much strength from the other 99% that take care of us that are deploying. You know, most of the guys that I speak to, both the men and the women that are deploying and have deployed, you know, they're not so concerned so much with themselves as they are with taking care of their families. And that is where people just totally come through. So if you haven't served in the military or if you are in the military and you haven't been deployed, what Minnesotans do to support our families is so important and so appreciated.
Our troops for many, many years have gone to war again and again and again, and fortunately today we have a society who supports the troops and supports their families, and we have programs like BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org and people like the Major, who was with us earlier today, to testify how important that is to have help for the families.
Well, I've seen it firsthand, and to get an unsolicited care package from a Minnesota group or a card from a school child, it's just absolutely inspiring, and it's sincerely appreciated. You know, people, they certainly take care of our families. They take care of the troops. There's so many different programs. You mentioned BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org. That's really a gateway to all of the programs that people who don't serve in the military, how they can support us in uniform.
And it's really the small things that count. Mow the lawn, shovel the snow, make some cookies, go for a visit. Give the spouse of a deployed troop a couple hours off to go get their hair done or just to have a break from the children. Those things that you can't help with.
Exactly. MinnesotaNationalGuard.org has a gateway to for those that are interested in doing just that, to have the Military Family Care Initiative, where they can in fact sign up to do just those things. And there's so many other organizations throughout Minnesota. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation that specifically takes care of our service members, the Minnesota Military Appreciation Fund, so many more that really take care of our troops.
Colonel, I know you wanted to mention something about Operation Minnesota Nice.
Well, that's very true. You know, it's a lot of people are inclined to ship things to us service members that when we're deployed. And again, I got so many care packages when I was deployed. And I know that my troops certainly appreciated that. But OperationMinnesotaNice.com, they organize packing meetings, and they do it at about 50 locations throughout the state. So if you visit that website, you can join up with a group in your area and get some great stuff to our troops.
Colonel, the one thing I've learned the past few years is if people want to help, if they want to help support the troops and their families, before they start doing something, they should reach out to Beyond the Yellow Ribbon and ask if it's needed and how to most effectively do it.
That is so true. You know, and let's start with simple thank yous. A thank you goes a long way. You know, when you see a military family out in your community, just thank them for supporting service members.
Colonel, one last question, and this one I know is important to everyone that has a loved one that's deployed, everyone that has a member of the military overseas. We're coming up on the holidays, Thanksgiving coming up quickly, and Christmas. It's a time to gather family together and rejoice. And a lot of folks are feeling guilty about the fact that they have loved ones overseas that are deployed. You've been there. You've been one of the troops deployed. What would you say to them about that guilt feeling?
I would tell them to stop feeling guilty. You know, our service members, when they're deployed, they're less concerned with themselves. They are concerned about their families. So what I would say to people that feel guilty that they haven't served or they're in the military and they haven't deployed, just simply pitch in and help. What can they do for a service member's family?
And really part of the reason that they're deployed and serving overseas and risking their lives is so that we can enjoy our freedoms here.
That is exactly it, Tom. And it's a privilege to serve, and it's just great to see the great support from our citizens.
Colonel, thank you for those kind words today. That's Colonel Olson, the Director of Public Affairs for the Minnesota National Guard. If you have a question, we'd love to hear from you on Facebook and the Minnesota or at MinnesotaMilitaryHour.com. Click on Contact Us and let us know what's in your mind. We look forward to answering your questions soon. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, a weekly look at the issues surrounding Minnesota military service members, families, and employers. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Major Rob Matala from the Minnesota National Guard, Annette Kuiper from Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, Al Holton from the Minnesota Commander's Task Force, historian Stephen Osman, the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs Deputy Commissioner Reggie Worlds, and of course, the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash. Thank you for joining us today for the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. If you have questions for our mailbag or if you want to check out our podcast of today's show and all our shows, visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Please join us next Sunday morning at 7 as we talk about Operation Military Nice, County Veteran Service Officers, and the upcoming deployment of Minnesota's Company B, 2nd General Support Aviation Battalion. And I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week. I'm Tom Lyons. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of KTLK, Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.